Well, one thing I say to creators often is like, what do you want to be when you grow up? Because if you think that you're still a YouTuber in 20 years, you might want to rethink how you're playing this game. If step one is build a successful YouTube channel and step 10 is get a Netflix deal, where the hell are steps 2 through 9? Nobody has built them yet. Whoever can build a bridge between what we call the creator economy and traditional entertainment and media, that's the winner. That's what we're trying to be.
Hey, podcast listeners, it's Samir.
Hey, everybody, this is Colin.
And this is Nate.
Nate, third time back on the show.
Back in the seat.
All right, what do we have this week?
Yeah, so we're chatting about Nebula. If you're not familiar, Nebula is an independent creator-owned streaming service that ended 2023 with 680,000 paying subscribers. Basically, how it works is partner creators each have their own unique Nebula signup link. Think Real Engineering, Sam Denby from Wendover Productions. And when a viewer clicks through and purchases a subscription, the corresponding creator receives a cut of the subscription revenue. Plus, about 50% of the company's equity pool is allocated to creators on the platform. And this is pretty cool. If Nebula were to ever sell, all participant creators would be paid accordingly.
What's the cost for a Nebula subscription?
It depends on the deal you get. They had a package with CuriosityStream for a while, but it's roughly $5 a month or so.
$5 a month. So this is essentially, it's Patreon or membership, but bundled with a bunch of creators.
Yep.
Interesting. Yeah, I hear a lot about it, specifically from you.
But am I like the Nebula guy in this
you
office?
You're the Nebula guy in the office. And people ask us to cover them quite a bit. But what really made me familiar with Nebula is jet lag. Right. Mm-hmm. Like that's like probably, I mean, we've talked about it as like their most prominent show, but from what I've heard, it maybe isn't. And there is actually more content on Nebula that people are watching.
Yeah, it definitely drives the most subscriptions. But I think even as Dave Wiskus, the CEO of Nebula, who you're about to hear from, said, you know, their three most popular original shows were Jetlag, a travel competition show, Night of the Coconut, which is a short film about a genocidal coconut, and
wait, what?
Yeah. I think the third is a play called The Prince that debuted in London to sold out shows. He talks about Abigail Thorne a little bit in our conversation, the creator and actress behind it.
So those three shows brought in the most amount of subscriptions.
Yep.
The number of subscriptions surprises me. Mm-hmm. 600,000 plus subscribers, because that's on a monthly basis.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty, a significant business.
That's significant business, yeah.
But just for context, Netflix ended 2023 with around 260 million.
Sure.
Disney Plus, 146 million. I'm not taking anything away from Nebula, but I think just as we're talking about streaming platforms, this is an indie streaming platform. It's important to know the difference.
Yeah. And I think one thing that's important to note too is that it's pretty much entirely bootstrapped. I know they had the deal with CuriosityStream. They had some sort of involvement with capital allocated. But yeah, Nebula is this indie streaming service that the creators, again, founded it, they operate it, and have bootstrapped it to this point.
Bootstrapped probably because the production cost is near zero for most of the stuff that they originally put out. But you were talking to Dave because of some news that they announced this week, and you were writing about it in the published press.
Yeah, and what's interesting, you know, I know you compared it, Samir, a little bit to Patreon with like this collection of creators, but the way Dave sees it, he kind of describes Nebula as, think of Disney Plus, right? When you log on, they have different categories for Marvel, for Pixar, for Star Wars. And they just announced this big UI update on Tuesday where the platform will look similar with content categories, including news, culture, comedy, etc. But in doing that, it's not the craziest news announcement in the world. But what it means is they're going to be investing, allocating real budgets into each of these categories, into original programming. And especially on Tuesday, part of their big announcement for their news division, they've tapped Jack Kelly, the creator behind online media group TLDR. And Dave explains that a bit more in our conversation.
For me, the reason to talk about this now is also because of the announcement made on our channel on Monday with Mr. Beast announcing his Amazon Prime Video competition show. This is an example of, you know, the largest creator taking to a streamer. And we got a question in the comments that was like, well, what does this mean for the rest of us? Because the comment just considers Mr. Beast an outlier, which yes, he is at the very top. And it begs the question, is there an opportunity for creators to get involved with streamers and to make streaming quality content if you're not Mr. Beast? And that's a lot of what Dave and Nate, I know you get into. So I don't want to give too much away, but it is a fascinating conversation between the two of you.
Yeah. And I mean, I think Nebula is a really interesting player here. And it feels like there's not many people more qualified to comment on, you know, the streaming and creator worlds colliding than Dave. So yeah, we're going to drop you into the conversation I had with him. Really enjoyed it. And then come back and I'll talk about it together. Dave, great to chat as always. I want to get right into it. You tweeted out on March 12th, big news coming next week. The floor is yours. What is the big news you have to share?
So this is kind of we want to do a few things. We want to acknowledge where we come from. So a lot of our slate for this year is documentary projects. Boomers from Tom Nicholas, Pigment of Your Imagination from Sarah Renee Clark, The Baltimore Scandal from Bobby Broccoli, Kevin. These are designed to be factual documentary projects in the spirit of the world we come from. Entertaining people or enriching people with facts, breaking it down into fact and fiction. The factual side of this is it's where we come from. We don't want to let that go. We don't. That's the kind of creator who built the service originally and still core to who we are. And we're going to take that one step further with the news in my big news coming next week is news. We've got one of the big categories, probably the most serviced at launch, is our news category. And part of that is building out new shows. Like we're launching with a new show called The War Room from Real Life Lore, exploring what is the state of all of the various conflicts around the world right now. Because it's hard, especially as Americans, it's hard to remember how many countries there are. We're terrible at geography. It's hard to remember what's going on here. How does this affect that? Until something really big comes up, like Russia and Ukraine or Israel-Palestine, then those things are heavily in the news cycle. Even then, it's hard to get all the context. So we're building news around keeping and holding that context. The page itself is being curated by the TLDR news team. Jack from TLDR News has come on as our news director, helping to make sure that that page stays fresh and curated and that we're thinking about bringing in the news creators who might be able to flesh it out and add interesting context and expanding that sort of thought and ideology across all of the different categories.
You named a lot of the originals projects you have slated for 2024, spending up to six-figure budgets on individual projects. I also remember when you put out the release about Abigail Thorne's Dracula's Ex-Girlfriend, which I believe is supposed to come out over the summer. What has you the most personally motivated to keep taking Nebula to this next level?
So fact is half of the story. The other half is fiction. And this is where my background and Sam's background, Sam Denby, our chief content officer, and the guy behind Wendover have this interesting jet lag. Our approaches are a little different. He's really emotionally invested in documentary storytelling, game shows, that kind of thing. I personally am very excited about the narrative storytelling. And so while half of our slate and half of our motivation right now is around fact, where we come from, I think that to move into the next phase, when you look at YouTube as a platform and you think about what it is and what comes out of YouTube, like you can name your favorite video essayist, you can name your favorite travel creator. Can you name your favorite sitcom? What's your favorite scripted drama on YouTube? Right? Like it's strange to me that for all of the things that YouTube provides, there's no real motivation baked into the platform for people to do scripted storytelling with any sort of production value and gain any sort of traction. Because it's not because YouTube hates that, I don't believe. Or because they're jerks or something. I think that just the dynamics of the platform and the way that the discovery algorithm works is that the amount of time and money and production value you have to put into something to even get the first video out the door. And that first video, you can't even monetize those views because you're not part of the partner program yet. So launching a new show like that, it's a big lift. It's very heavy. And it costs a ton of money. And why would anybody invest in doing a sitcom on YouTube when you could put the same time and effort into making a pilot and then trying to sell the pilot to Netflix or something? the kind of person who wants to start experimenting with that kind of storytelling, they just don't really have a good avenue into it. With Dracula's Ex-Girlfriend, which we announced last year, the background on that story, Abigail Thorne has been an actor for years. I think roughly as long as she's been doing YouTube. And one of the conversations she and I had a couple of years ago was around, she said something like she wants to maybe step back from YouTube and focus on acting. And I was like, well, why not do both? And she said, because nobody's going to give me an acting job because I'm a popular YouTuber. I'm like, well, no, but you can use the success you find on this platform to go build your own things and then get those taken seriously. And so she did. We made The Prince together. It was an interesting choice to go for a play first, but it was actually a really smart choice on her part because it was easier to get attention around the fact that that play sold out. A full 5-week run off West End in London sold out every night. And she won some awards for the writing and for her role acting. That got her some attention, and now she's being cast in very large projects you'll likely hear about soon. When we were talking about what is the next step in her journey, she was kicking stuff around, and then she came to me, and she's like, well, I got this thing. It's a short film. It's like My Dinner with Andre, but vampires. Dracula's Ex-Girlfriend. It's like, done. Yes. The answer is yes. Let's make this happen. And it takes us down this path of she's proven herself. She has the chops. It's not an ambition problem. It's not a skill problem. It's not a talent problem. It's a problem of resources, connections. And so we can do things to put those pieces together, at least at the scale of a short film. And years ago, I was talking to Patrick Willems, about how do you go from being YouTuber? Because his plan was always be a filmmaker, and YouTube was something that just kind of sidetracked him for a while. But that trajectory of dip your toes in with a short, then move on to the next thing, then move on to the next thing. We think of it in terms of like leveling up. Patrick's, his project on our slate, it's called The Dinner Plan, a short film. And before we get to the set to produce, he is on the crew for Dracula's Ex-Girlfriend. He's the B camera operator to get set experience. He's on set. He's seeing how these things work because our director on Dracula's Ex-Girlfriend, Valentina V, is very experienced. He's there. He's getting to see how these things are done. He's getting to learn from her so that when he goes on set with his first short, he's got that experience in that context. And we'll have other creators there on set learning from him. So what's got me excited, building this pipeline. If step one is build a successful YouTube channel and step 10 is get a Netflix deal, where the hell are steps 2 through 9? Nobody has built them yet. Whoever can build a bridge between what we call the creator economy and traditional entertainment and media, that's the winner. That's what we're trying to be.
I hear that, and I hear everything you're saying, and I think it's really in line with what Sam's talked about as well in the past. I will push back a little bit just from the sense of, I'm not sure if you're familiar with a creator named Kanigra Dion, who started with low-lift sketch comedy videos and has kind of worked her way up to kind of a hybrid model where now she kind of has several TV show style productions and series all going on her YouTube channel at once. I also know I talked with Rhett and Link recently, and they got so fed up with the traditional process that they decided to shoot their entire TV show concept in-house and release it on their personal YouTube channel. But in bringing both of those examples up, I do agree that there is no path right now, right? And I believe that's what you're saying in the sense of just where is this middle ground?
Yeah, I don't mean to suggest that we're the first to do anything. All of this has been done before. The problem is that there's no reproducible way to get there. There's no system built for it. That's the part that hasn't been done before. And that's what I'm excited about. Creators doing sketch comedy, I mean, the guy we've got doing it, DC Pearson, he came from making sketch comedy videos on an internet platform. He's done this before. That's not breaking new ground. These aren't necessarily as individual things going to redefine how the industry works. What I'm excited about, and that's not because I don't have faith in those projects, they're all going to change the world. But the thing that has me excited is that these are now possible to go from idea to execution within a system that is built for that to happen. right now, for Rhett and Link to do what they're doing, they first have to build their empire, then have the room to do that. For this other creator, I don't know what the story behind the scenes is. I will definitely check it out. But that is a thing that you can make stuff like that. You can. The economic cost will be high if you want there to be strong production value, or you're going to end up with something that looks like, you know, YouTube content, which is going to be hard to have taken seriously. Or you're just so incredibly talented that you were able to pull that off, but another person who might be an incredibly talented writer wouldn't necessarily get to come and join the writer's room, right? Like one of the challenges of being a YouTuber is that you have to do everything yourself.
Yeah, and I think that's the key element you identify, which I wanted to highlight as well, is the educational component, right? Like the learning component. Creators being on other creator/filmmaker sets, what they learn, they then take to their production. And then there's just a whole host of routes, if you will, more and more people just learning these skills that, as you articulated, I've talked with creators myself, some with millions of subscribers who want to start producing shows and concepts at a higher level, but are struggling because they do have to pay the bills and they do have to keep up with the day-to-day of maintaining a YouTube channel, which is their main source of income that keeps food on the table. So I do think that's the biggest key distinction I'm hearing. And it seems like that's what you're really investing in, how to create a process around all of this and a pipeline of sorts.
Yeah, like, I don't know if you watched the Oscars or Emmys or Golden Globes or any of that, but when I look at those shows versus the streamies, what I'm struck by is that the Oscars, it's a room full of people where everything they've ever done has been in collaboration, true collaboration with other people in that room. You go to the streamies, and we're all, like, on our own little islands, and there's plenty of people who do collabs. That's not the same thing. There's plenty of people who work together because they built a channel as like a duo or something like that. But it's not quite the same sort of networked ecology of interaction.
It's much more fractured.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody tends to, it's an archipelago. It's not a united nation of any sort. And there can be good things about that, and there can be bad things about it. And this is, again, not because I want to pass judgment, but it is hard to get the kind of experience that you would get working in a Hollywood system. If you are an extremely talented writer who starts making video essays on YouTube because you saw, I don't know, every frame of painting and you thought, I would love to do stuff like that, as so many creators did, and you go out and you start making, you find success and you're paying your bills, it's great that you're paying your bills. It still doesn't get you a writing job. And it can be somewhat creatively satisfying because you're still writing, but that doesn't get you a job writing for a show. And it doesn't get you any experience in a writer's room. It doesn't get you the experience of developing a script within a studio. So how do you take these people who have that raw talent and they have that ambition, and there just isn't a system for them to develop it in any way? How do you create tools for those people to develop those skills? We know that they're there. We know for a fact that those people exist, and we know how talented they are, but not everyone who can write and is has an audience on YouTube wants to direct or produce or run a camera or even know what kind of camera to use. And not everyone who wants to be a director has access to those tools. I forget his name, the guy who won for cinematography at the Oscars made a comment about to all those aspiring filmmakers out there, you should try this hip new thing called celluloid. And it's like, oh, come on, man. Like, we're just trying to get our stuff made, and you want us to, like, go learn a whole new, impossibly expensive and difficult process relative to take my phone out of my pocket and hit the cinema mode button? How about we just make really good things and stop being so pretentious about it? Being taken seriously is the challenge, and finding an avenue to make the things that you want to make. Not everyone is a solo artist. How do we create an environment for people to form bands?
It's an interesting circle of life of sorts, from the sense of big Hollywood productions taking a whole village in order to even exist in the first place, and people who are insanely talented at very specific things. And then there being such the big promise of the internet being that you could handle everything, you know, creative control, writing, be on screen, et cetera. And now it almost feels like a full circle of, you know, okay, there are a lot of people who figured out how to be really good at a bunch of different facets of the creative process and the entrepreneurial process, the creative entrepreneurial process with it, but still to be at that 99th percentile, to be at the highest level, you know, that takes education and it does take a team. So it almost feels like we're coming full circle a little bit.
Yeah, there's no university that you can go to learn how to do all of this. And in terms of like being a creator on the internet, you sort of like start doing it and you learn the tools as best you can, and you make friends along the way and learn from them. And there's podcasts you can listen to, and there's no shortage of gurus who are trying to sell you all of the algorithm secrets. But even then, if you somehow crack the code or luck into it, there's no way off of that treadmill necessarily into doing other types of creative work. You're sort of locked into whatever you become. And that's a little unfortunate. There's so much potential there. There's so much talent there. And not all of those people want to be forever what they are today. Well, one thing I say to creators often is like, what do you want to be when you grow up? Because if you think that you're still a YouTuber in 20 years, you might want to rethink how you're playing this game.
Unless you're willing to, you know, make a good mythical morning for 10 straight years, you know, 5 days a week.
Some people have that in them. I don't think everybody does. And not everybody wants to be Mr. Beast.
Yeah. Dave, every time we talk, I feel like we could just continue talking for hours, but I might cut it off there.
All right.
Thanks for coming on today and taking the time. I appreciate it as always. So guys, in that conversation, Dave talked a lot about positioning themselves as a premium streaming service like a Netflix or an Apple TV Plus. You know, they want to break this mold of being thought of as UGC. They describe Nebula more as a curated group that can upload videos on Nebula. It's not like a YouTube or Facebook where anyone can start an account and upload a video. But I really thought this idea of steps 2 through 9 was really interesting. You know, again, 1 being a platform where anyone can post, 10 being the creators who can get the Netflix deal. And Dave did a really great job of illustrating that within this conversation. My question to you all, though, with this idea of steps 2 through 9, where do you think that place is right now?
I think it's an interesting framing that I'd never really thought of before. It's too expensive to make this type of content to just go ahead and release it on YouTube. Dave talks about it. He's like, you're not going to start up a new channel, invest all that money, and then put out something scripted or narrative that costs a lot. Because you're not going to get any distribution. And he even says you're not going to be a part of the partner program. Like, you won't even make any money potentially. So as I look at it, steps 2 through 9 does not really exist. You can make TV and streaming quality content and video, but you sort of have to be a creator that's already built up your own distribution and you have a way to fund it. You know, Michelle Carre clearly is like making streaming quality video. Same with Yes Theory. You know, there are a lot of creators who are making quality video that, you know, I don't think you would ever watch it and think, oh, well, I can tell by the production that this is YouTube. It's just that to make that, they've had to go through this journey of having the distribution that will allow them to recoup their funds and make money on these productions.
I'll tell you what makes those productions feel YouTube is when they break in the middle and do an ad read. When Michelle Carre does a SoFi ad read in the middle of her Houdini video, or Yes Theory does a, you know, Headspace or BetterHelp ad read at the end of their videos, like the quality of that content doesn't match the nature of like YouTube content. It's very different when you see Drew Gooden, who's like commentary, Cody Ko, sitting at their computer delivering. And so I think we are in this weird moment where it's like Michelle, Yes Theory, these people are capable of producing extremely high quality 22-minute or 30-minute content, but the monetization model of like sponsorship, brand deals feels kind of off there, and you'd prefer it to be in like a subscription streaming model. But that amount of money is right now only available in sponsorship.
Yeah, that's a good distinction. I mean, when I think about Jetlag, which has brought the most number of subscribers, they shoot it with iPhones, right? You watch that show and it, to me, actually, it feels YouTube. It does not feel streaming to me, but I agree with you that like the distinction is they don't have to break to thank a sponsor. They don't have to break the story.
you know, that concept of like feeling YouTube. We were faced with this years ago when we pitched a show to the producer JD Roth and Scooter Braun, where we brought them in a pitch. And when we pitched it, we cut like a video. And the video to us was like cool, premium, told the story. You had to use a little bit of imagination because we shot it in a very YouTube lo-fi style. JD looked at it and was like, I don't understand this. It's too digital for me. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And I think that is what this conversation is about of like, if Colin and I get the call tomorrow from a Netflix to make a documentary, I feel capable of doing it, but I've actually never done it. Mm-hmm. Right. And like when he's talking about when you're in the room at the Oscars and everyone is a collaborator and this concept of like going from a solo artist to being in a band, like we made something for NBC one time and it was a really uncomfortable experience. And I think that's the thing is like, I don't have any space to learn how to become a Netflix unscripted producer. I would love to do that. But what we're doing today in this conversation, his suggestion is that what we're doing today is not the ladder up to going to do that. There's still a huge white space in between.
What did you guys think about his concept of an archipelago? Creators do collabs, but there's not a ton of deep-seated collaboration because you're awarded to keep costs low and focus on your own face, your own brand. Do you feel like that was an accurate portrayal or description of the current creator space?
First off, for everyone out there, I think let's just define archipelago.
That was crazy. The first time I listened to it, I was like, Dave, where did that come from?
It's a stretch of water containing many islands. So saying that we as creators are all isolated. Mm-hmm. We're doing interesting things. We have our own islands, but it's not a united body of land here that we're all working off of.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. And I think, again, it's the monetization model that makes it as such, right? Like what's easier for me is to just continue producing content in this building without anyone else involved. And that's how we keep the show going and moving and keep producing content and putting stuff out that's generating ad dollars that's coming back in and allowing us to make more content. There's no break in time where it's like, let's spend 3 months making something. We don't have the monetization model for that. So to me, it all comes down to like, if Dave and Nebula can solve like, hey, Colin and Tamir, here's $3 million to go make a show, come back in a year with a great unscripted series. Sure, but that doesn't yet exist. If that does start to exist, maybe we start to reevaluate how we're producing and produce stuff differently. But it's just not sustainable right now for creators to take that long of a break to go make something meaningful.
Something Dave said at the end that I found to be pretty interesting. He said, one thing I say to creators often is, what do you want to be when you grow up? Because if you think that you're still a YouTuber in 20 years, you might want to rethink how you're playing this game. And I thought it was interesting that he holds the belief that YouTube, for the majority of us, is not a long-term career. I was curious, do you agree with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. I think you can do it, but I think your ad dollars are going to fluctuate to a point of discomfort. So like, there's no questions asked. You can make YouTube videos for the rest of your life, but I think that you're going to play with the ad market in different ways that's not going to support your lifestyle.
But is it true that you can work within a more traditional system for the rest of your life? Like, is Hollywood or working for streamers that much more stable that the assumption is you can work there for 30, 40 years?
It's probably less stable.
Yeah, exactly. Because
right? You don't have control over it. Yeah.
So this is just an alternative. And it's not necessarily a solution for stability, career stability.
I was thinking of like late night hosts. They might host those shows for 30, 40 years, which is why they're such valuable positions if you can kind of be like grandfathered into them. But past that, unless you're Christopher Nolan and that A-plus level director, doesn't really feel like traditional entertainment, particularly now, is that stable.
My assumption is that any creative career is not stable.
To me, I don't know if this is about stability or making like really premium work. That's what this conversation feels like it's about to me, is like funding for more premium work. Like I'd love to make a documentary where we pull in the best of our peers into the room. You get in like a Hayden Hillier-Smith or a Dodford to come support on the post-production and research. You get the best animation. Like think about when Jimmy did Squid Game, which was his biggest budget thing at $3.5 million, he brought in other YouTube creators to support it. Like So Crispy Media came in and did the VFX for that. That's the collaboration across channels that happens when there's budget for it.
Yeah. To your point, I think it's not career stability. It's about career development.
Yeah.
right?
Because where do we go next? Yeah. How can we be the next big entertainment producers? Yes, we have the audience, but we don't have the skill set yet to actually go make stuff for these other platforms. Jimmy made the move to, you know, Amazon Prime Video, but that's one of the biggest deals ever in the creator economy. Like,
or like entertainment.
Yeah. You know? Is there another comp? Like this? Yeah. The Sidemen, you know, had a movie on Netflix, but like, And like,
guys, Jake Paul's fighting Mike Tyson. What are we talking about?
Sure. Yeah. That is crazy. Like, no one talks about that, but that is crazy for like Netflix's second live sporting event ever is Jake Paul, Mike Tyson.
Who would have thought YouTube boxing with KSI and all this and Joe Weller would have led to Mike Tyson?
That's what I mean. It's
Jake
like
Paul.
It's few and far between when it's happening now. And maybe some of that is trust in our ability to produce. I think there is some level of trust in our ability to drive audience, but I don't think there's trust in our ability to produce.
Yeah, I left this conversation feeling like Dave is onto something and that there is a need for the 2 through 9.
So off of that discussion, right, and kind of wrapping up here, when you look at the future of the creator space and more just the modern entertainment industry, what do you think Nebula's impact will be?
I don't know, but I hope that it operates as an incubator for really cool premium ideas that allow for more creatives to collaborate with each other. I think that point from Dave was really cool. And I hope that we get the time and space and budgets to experiment.
For all you listening, this is part of our coverage for our newsletter, The Published Press. If you want to read more stories like this and hear about them first, the newsletter appears in your inbox 3 times a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
It's at thepublishpress.com. Just put in your email. You'll start getting emails 3 times a week. And you can reply to those emails and tell Nate what you think.
If there's a word you think, like archipelago, that we can sneak into a future podcast, let us know.
That's good. All right. Reply to Nate with a good word for us to sneak in. Thanks, Nate, for joining. And we'll see all of you on Monday.